What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from pitcherlist.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is May 20th. And yes, we're going to talk about baseball. By the way, if you're in Brooklyn, New York, I am hosting a pitcherlist meetup at the Commissioner in Park Slope at 7 p.m. Eastern time. We're going to watch the Yankees and Rangers game. Come on by. It should only be a few of us or so. So if you really want to just like hang out and have a good time, it should be like 10 to 15 people, something like that. Come on by. It's going to be fun. We're just going to talk baseball and just hang out. And it should be great. The Commissioner in Park Slope, Brooklyn, tonight, Tuesday, May 20th at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Ryan Pepiot, I wanted to talk about him after yesterday's game of 6 innings of 300 runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts, just 6 whiffs and an 18% CSW. And here's the thing about him. Ryan Pepiot just looked hittable, and I hate it. He did get a bit singled out with a lot of fastballs allowing hits here. We had a solo shot on a not terrible changeup down and away, really more outside than down. But just 2 for 38 whiffs without those good locations on those four seamers. Yeah, that's not really fun. Pepiot, the changeup and the slider weren't really pristine either. And I'm a little annoyed. I think that Ryan Pepiot's stuff is innately just so good. The four-seamer should be cruising upstairs. It has all the things you would want for it. You have the slider that should get whiffs. You have the changeup that was an 80-degree changeup coming up. It's all there. It's just he's acting like a hipster of not having the command and the ability to really work at bats as he wants to. And I've been very much in on the stuff with a floor that is not nearly as bad as other hipsters. Hey, you can do some pitchers stifling the entire roster. But it's obviously very frustrating as a manager to say like, yeah, he should be doing better, but he's not executing the way that he needs to. And that's a big difference to me than other guys who are not getting results, who are doing the things that they should be doing and not getting those results. He is missing out on the command side, or it's even actually in times where there's some simple tweak of like, hey, throw more cutters or don't be throwing this pitch or that pitch. Like with Pepiot, it's like, no, I'm actually expecting some sort of development in ability to turn the corner, right? So with Ryan Pepiot, it will happen over time. It's not one of those things that I think where he's just aiming middle of the glove and whatever happens, happens. We've seen that kind of bad command from a lot of other guys. They don't really take that step forward. I think Ryan Pepiot is very much able to take that next step. However, I don't know when. Hopefully at some point. And it is nice to see that in a, quote, off day, it could have been worse, but he's still got enough strikes. He's still good enough that it's not this ridiculous, crooked number. I mean, that's kind of how it is with Pepiot. He doesn't really allow those 7 earned run games multiple times. He's still kind of hard to hit. And the bad games are like 3 and 4 earned runs or something like that. So there was something to that where it's not as terrible of a floor. You have Robbie Ray versus Chris Bubich, and this was just as advertised. Both of them were fantastic. We saw Robbie Ray go 67% strikes on everything. Everything. I mean, most of it was like 70% plus. 9 over 10 on the changeup at a 50% CSW. Robbie Ray, oh, thank you so much. He's a prime example of why we don't just look at results early in the season and say this is what he is, and you put some narrative of like this is what he has been in previous years or whatever, this is just more of that or whatever. Really understanding, hey, cool, this is how this changes and if it should or should not. Robbie Ray was throwing all these four seamers, and we're like, look, you have all these other pitches, these should be getting strikes and be thrown more, this will get better. It has for Robbie Ray. That is not saying that he deserves aces gonna ace now, because yes, it's very possible that Robbie Ray fails all of a sudden to throw those strikes to those secondaries and it turns a bit more into that early season guy. That said, I think everybody understands now, Robbie Ray is more of this variety pitcher with sliders, changeups, and curveballs in the mix, and not just 70% fastballs. Thus, this should be more of a plateau than what the plateau was establishing back after the first few weeks of the year. With Chris Bubich, I have to mention, the four-seamer still is weird, and 7 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, 3 walks, 5 Ks is actually really not representative of what he did, I think. Only on the side of walks, because he was really squeezed and he was super efficient. He deserved to not allow many hits and earned runs. He really did a great job moving the fastball around. The changeup was down and away super well. 50% strikes on that changeup. However, it was under the plate a lot in a competitive way. And that really did help with that four-seamer and that slider really sweeper as well, doing good things. So I love where Bubic is at right now. I love the fact that his load location, the changeup, is way, way better than it used to be in the past. Luis Castillo against the White Sox, 7 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 0 walks, and 5 Ks. It's against the White Sox, 1 over 23 whiffs on the changeup plus slider. And if you remember in that Yankee game, he barely touched that changeup to get whiffs too. I am very concerned. I think that the slider was as good as we'll get against that Yankee lineup in Seattle, where he was just outside of the zone a lot to right-handers, and I don't think that's actually what we're going to get moving forward. So this might be actually the best time to move on from Castillo and sell if you can. If people are believing the last two starts are really this big shift, I just don't think that the secondaries are what they used to be, and the fastball is highly suspect. You have Sonny Gray doing the best that we needed him to do. This is Sunny Skies. One of my favorite roundup titles ever is Sunny Skies Ahead. And this was against the Tigers with a win. 6 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. 13 whiffs and 30% CSW across 90 pitches. Also great. The sweeper was everything we saw last year. Oh my gosh. Down and glove side to both righties and lefties. And last year, that 30% plus strikeout rate for Sonny Gray was a product of two things. One, a stupid, unsustainable sinker put away rate to right-handers, 40%, and a good put away rate generally is like 25%. So you see above 30%, you're like, yeah, that's not going to stick around. Hunter Brown and your four-seamer to right-handers. But we also saw about 30% to lefties with a sweeper, which is very rare considering that sweepers are generally not very effective to opposite-handed batters. But Sonny Gray had this amazing skill of getting it just under the zone, underneath that nitro zone to lefties. And that's exactly what we saw here. This was gorgeous. So I really hope this means that Sonny Gray has figured that out again, because we have not been seeing that a lot this season. And we saw Quinn Priester have an opener, and he went 5.1 innings of 300 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts against the Orioles, with just 5 whiffs, 18% CSW, 66 pitches. You don't want Quinn Priester on your rosters. Mitch Keller had the Reds carpet rolled out for him, and he strolled along for 6 innings, 100 runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. He went opposite Lodolo, though, and unfortunately for Keller, he had the loss in this one. He had a ton of called strikes on sweepers and sinkers, 14 of them combined, and he gets the Brewers next, and maybe that can be okay because the Brewers are not a very good offense. But yeah, Mitch Keller, like, this is the most Mitch Keller of, hey, this is successful, of 117 whip, 100 run, and 5 strikeouts in 6 innings. That is like the most standard Mitch Keller success, and it's good, it's just not absurd. And the floors are very bad. Just keep that in mind. Nick Lodolo, again, on the other side, got the win, 6 innings, 1 run, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. The changeup was really a big part of this, going down and away to right-handers a lot. And it went, it had so many outs, save for one stupid one that went over the fence, whatever. But this is the Lodolo I want to see. I want to see changeups being a big part of his game, because the fastball and curveball are good, but they're not absurdly good. And I think he needs a trifecta of the three really working for him to excel. It's kind of like Bubic, but I'd have a little bit more faith in Bubic in his four-seamer than I do Lodolo's. You have Kyle Freeland against the Phillies, going 5.1 innings of 1 run, 7 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks, 15 whips, 32% CSW in Coors. You got the gold star because that curveball was so good to right-handers. 10 over 27 whiffs overall, so consistent down and just under the plate. Oh my gosh, I love watching peak Freeland with his 71% strike rate. And I wish he wasn't in Colorado. I think about this a lot. There are so many starting pitchers who get trapped in Colorado or bad team contexts who could have been so much better if they were just removed from there. And I just feel for Kyle Freeland this way, but I'm sure he's happy. He has his contract and he's playing baseball and all that kind of stuff and whatever. Hunter Dobbins went against the Mets, 4.2 innings of 1 run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts. He got the early hook. He just had 2 whiffs in 66 pitches. And watching Dobbins, I'm like, yeah, those are pitches, but they're not anything special. And I don't think that you should be chasing after Dobbins, especially with the shag rug of the young man's floor. You have Bailey Ober and Logan Allen going 3 innings each in a suspended game. So I don't know if in your league, if you're going to get those stats today or yesterday or maybe later in the future. But Ober was actually going really well here, 25 over 26 strikes on his four-seamer and his changeup before this one ended, and lefties were getting a lovely serving of those changeups and four-seamers. A lot of hits on the four-seamer, though, and it's like 90-91 still, and I am very much set on Ober being like in the 40s now. Eno Saris was very much right about him and Hunter Brown thus far. Oh my gosh, I think about that constantly. But yeah, the cutter and the slider are just not good against righties. They're worse than they were last year. And that means against lefty-heavy lineups like the Cleveland Guardians, Bailey Ober thrives more so than a team like the Astros, who are right-handed heavy. We have to talk about Jose Soriano and Davis Martin, Brandon Pfaadt, and many others. Christopher Sanchez, Kodai Senga, all of those, and we'll talk about them after this break. Davis Martin went 7.1 innings, 200 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk in, 3 strikeouts against Seattle. Oh boy, this wasn't in Seattle. It was in Chicago, but just a 19% CSW with that cutter. However, CSW being low isn't necessarily a bad thing. It just means you're not getting towards strikeouts. But if you're getting toward outs, that's cool with me. And that's what this cutter did a lot, also with foul balls too. And you have a few whiffs overall, even though Davis Martin has in the past gotten a lot of whiffs with either the slider or the kick change. He's really moved away from that slider toward the cutter, which is fine for getting outs. It's just you need the kick change then to be really good, to be able to mitigate the fact that you're just now in Koufax's hands and that you have really questionable fastballs. So I'm still not really in on Davis Martin. I do like the fact that he is attacking the zone, and he didn't really allow a lot of hard contact in this. So thank you, cutter, for doing that. I hope this really sticks around. It's another start with that cutter, so he is in a better place than he was before. But I'm considering him a Toby bust. I don't know. It's not really for me. Kiedir Montero, 5.2 innings of 500 runs, 10 base runners, 3 Ks. Yeah, you don't want to go for Kiedir Montero. He had an opener this one. You know, no thank you. You have Jose Soriano against the Athletics. He got a win in 6 innings and 300 runs, 6 hits, 4 walks, 4 Ks. So it was a very, very poor quality start. Chat said it was a streaming victory. So fine, Peelbot and me both get a win for this, I guess. It is a win or a quality start, so fine. But I'm not happy with it really in 12-teamers because, yeah, this isn't helpful, say, for that win. And what he does is he throws these sinkers that are not really well spotted, but they're hard enough and they generally get some outs. And then a CSW darling curveball, cool. But I really want to see that development, that slider against righties. I feel like he won't be anything special until then. And it's a little too chaotic for me to chase constantly. So I find myself calling him a Toby and trying to avoid it, maybe chasing streamers instead. Brandon Pfaadt against the Dodgers, 6 innings, 300 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 0 strikeouts. 0 whiffs. I had to double check. He didn't earn a single whiff, Brandon Pfaadt, against the Dodgers in 95 pitches. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. He got the win. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? Wow. Not a single ball in play earned a hit. So he had a no-hitter? No, he allowed 3 solo shots. How ridiculous of a game is this? Absolutely bonkers. Thank you, Koufax. I think he got away with this. And this was also the second straight game where his lefty approach was not both curveballs and changeups, right? The curveball has been taking a break. I don't know if I like that. I've been in on Pfaadt, and now we're starting to see a little bit of a different approach to lefties. And like, no. I liked you because of that approach to lefties. So he gets the cards in Natty Light, that is the Nationals, after. That's awesome. I really think that Brandon Pfaadt should be soaring in those two, so I'm just going to ignore this for now. Christopher Sanchez, 300 runs in Coors. Fine. Coors is getting tougher and tougher for two reasons. One, the Rockies lineup is more used to Coors now. So the beginning of the year, generally in April, I think this is the thing. Someone give me the data for it, please. But my theory is that Rockies hitters are not as good in Coors early on because they're thrown off by the change of ball movement still. They're getting used to it. And then by May and June, they're getting more used to it. Also, weather implications in Colorado. The warmer gets, the ball goes out farther. So Colorado, now Coors is starting to become that, hey, maybe you want to be a little bit careful, even though it's such a bad lineup. 300 runs here in 6 innings, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 7 Ks for Christopher Sanchez. I do want to mention that he got so unfortunate with his runs, okay? He allowed a solo shot on a terrible slider. It was a terrible slider. But then he had allowed a double and a single for the second run, and then a double and a double, I believe it was, if I remember correctly, for the third. And like, it was the most efficient use of all of your hits. All of them contributed to runs. No walks. Like, oh, come on, man. 95 plus on the on the sinker, which isn't 94.5, which is good. We wanted to see more of that 96, 97 that we saw earlier on, really 96. But we haven't really seen that since the forearm scare, so fine. And the changeup did get those whiffs, so that's really cool. That's really the thing that matters the most to me. Tons of changeup whiffs means everything is all right. We have Kodai Senga against the Red Sox. 6 innings, 300 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 5 Ks. He had a tough early part of the game, and then he settled down, and that's fine. I do like the fact that he has 25% of his pitches being sweepers, sliders, and sinkers that are very complementary to the 3-pitch mix of cutters, 4-seamers, and forkballs. So he's not just that trio, which is, I think, very much in rhythm and good right now. And so he's playing the classics and everything. And then he has like those little interesting ones that every so often has a good moment. That is your Kodai Senga. He's not the top 20 guy that he was in the past because the 4-seamer isn't as effective as it used to be. But I like this version. I think he's going to be like a Holly of like a 23, 24% strikeout rate. I think that Senga is just going to be generally good, and that's pretty awesome to see. Colton Gordon against the Rays. You might not know who he is. He's an Astros southpaw who is kind of boring. It's his second start in the majors. 10 over 30 called strikes on his 91 mile per hour four-seamer is not something that's going to be replicated. Nor is the 57% CSW on his curveball as he just kind of flipped it in the zone here and there. 7 strikeouts is not something sustainable. It's just, don't do it. 2 first names, Colton Gordon. No, thank you. Man, Edward Cabrera, if I were doing the list again today, no, I would keep Lucas Giolito where he is, and I stand by it, and I really am excited to watch him tomorrow because let's go, Giolito. Let's get it done. Okay, maybe it's not tomorrow. Maybe it's in 2 days against the Orioles, but I do feel that Giolito is that guy with the complete arsenal, especially with that improved slider and the fact that he's flirting with 94 on his fastball finally again. But Eric Cabrera would be higher up too. Why? Because this was against the Cubs, and I watched this one, and he looked really good. 5 innings, 300 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 7 Ks. It was a 3-run shot with 2 outs, and it bounced off the outfielder's glove over the fence. Yeah, it was over the fence. It was making an amazing play, but it literally hit his glove. And oh man, he was that close. It was a really bad curveball. It was a hanging middle of the zone, first pitch curveball to a right-hander. That is like, okay, if they're looking for something slower, they are going to crush that, which they did. But 38% CSW for King Cole, as his sinker is turning into the strike pitch that the four-seamer wasn't. So he moved away from the four-seamer, and now he's throwing these sinkers, 71% strikes. I love this. I'm seeing 30% usage of the slider to right-handers. And this is the most in-control version I've seen of Edward Cabrera. Slider and curve between them, 46% CSW. The changeup, a little inconsistent, but had some really beautiful moments with it. I think this is a step forward for Edward Cabrera. And this was against the Cubs, remind you. 15 whiffs and 90 pitches. I'm very curious that Edward Cabrera is finding that rhythm, trusting the slider more, throwing sinkers instead of four-seamers. I'm a fan. And I'm curious as he gets an easier schedule. I think the next 4 is like the Angels. Then we have like the Nationals and Rays and Pirates. I think it's something like that. That's a good series of starts. And Edward Cabrera might be that guy all of a sudden. Like, no, the history, the walks and everything. I'm like, that is not how I function. I function about what are you doing now? He's changed a bit. Pitchers are very much creatures of rhythm. Like, this might actually be something where finally it's all coming together. The little pieces that we've seen over the years finally being something. Don't look at the from the top of the world looking down and just saying, well, this is blank over this amount of time. Don't look at those results. Look at what he's doing. This is very interesting. Landon Knack against the Arizona Diamondbacks came in after Jack Dreyer was terrible for 2 innings. And it was 5 innings of 4 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 3 Ks. So I really wish that Ben Kasparis was still in the rotation. Okay, cool. Don't go after Landon Knack. You have Dean Kramer, who is Dean Werewolf. 5.1 innings of 4 runs, 9 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks. The cutter is cool. I think that Kramer leaning to the cutter is a good thing. But yeah, you just had too many pitches at the plate. No, and last two here is Ben Brown against the Miami Marlins. Was our stream pick of the day, except for Jose Soriano, because Ben Brown actually was rostered more than 20%, so we had to change it. 4.2 innings of 600 runs, 7 hits, 0 walks, and 8 strikeouts. 16 whiffs for a Gallows pull. So this actually had the Gallows pull and the King Cole in it with Edward Cabrera on the other side. But 2 homers messed them up here. 12 over 40 whiffs on the hook, but just too many hittable heaters. That is the story of Ben Brown because he doesn't have a third pitch. It's just that simple. He would have also been a golden goal if it weren't for 4.2 innings because it was 39% CSW. You need to have 5 for a King Cole. But yeah, you don't really want to go for Ben Brown. The only reason we're in is because of the Marlins, but the Marlins, I guess, are an average offense. All right. And last but not least is JT Ginn, who went against the Angels in his return from the IL. In four innings of 4 runs, 6 hits, 0 walks, and 7 strikeouts, is very interesting because he's getting a lot of drop on his sinker. It is under 3 inches of vert, which is massive. I mean, that's legitimate drop on a sinker. And it was 17 for 36 called strikes, but it wasn't down, which is kind of interesting. I think that there's some interesting stuff here. He allowed a home run on a terrible slider to Ward, Taylor Ward, that went over the wall, and that really messed this one up. There's also I believe, what was it to Chenuel? Was it a sinker inside? I think it was. And yeah, it was a solo shot inside, I believe. And I can see a scenario where JT Ginn is like, okay, cool. I have these sliders that are better. Yeah, that bad one to Ward, but generally it was down and away to right-handers. And then I have these sinkers already getting a ton of drop and get me outs. Like, it's kind of a better version of Jack Kahanowitz. I don't know. I'm going to be monitoring this. Hopefully he gets a good schedule in the future when we feel locked in about it to take advantage. That is it for today. Thank you all so much for supporting what we do. You should be watching these on YouTube now. If you don't know, you can watch all of them during the week there. I am not expected to do ones on weekends anymore. That was more early in the season. I will try if I have time, but do not expect these Plus Pitch podcasts on the weekends moving forward. Those will be exceptions, not the rule. But that is it for today. So thank you all so much for listening. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIP be low and your strikeouts high.